Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back to the Secret to Success Summit Success School. And it's been an amazing, amazing summit so far, an amazing few days, amazing guests sharing their life insights and best practices on what it takes to truly succeed, not just in theory, but what excites me is the people I'm bringing to you. They have lived it. They have been there. They have failed. They have succeeded. They have, through real-world experiences, truly created success on every level, and they're sharing their profound tools to assist you and inspire you to manifest your true soul's destiny and fulfill your true potential. So it's been an amazing summit. Hopefully you're taking lots of notes and really putting into practice the insights and the knowledge that, that these amazing visionaries are sharing with you. So our journey continues, folks, and I promise that I have a really amazing interview for you today, someone I'm very, very excited to talk to and share with and introduce you to. We're going to jump in. You know, this man is an amazing human being. I've seen him speak many times. I really enjoy and love his books and, you know, considered one of the greatest marketers of all time. And he's an amazing man. He was in The Secret. You probably know him in The Secret. He's had many number one best-selling books on spiritual marketing and hypnotic writing and really a visionary in many ways. So I'm really excited today to introduce you to the one and only Joe Vitale, who I know you all have heard of. Joe, how are you?
I'm doing great. Been looking forward to this. What an exciting thing you're doing. I'm flattered that you've included me. So glad to be here.
Great to have you here, man. It's really great to have you here. So listen, we're going to jump in, and I have a bunch of questions I'm bursting to ask you. But just for those that may not know your story, I would love for you to just set the context a little bit before we dive into some specific questions. Just set the context and share. You know, you've had quite a fascinating story, and we'd love for you to just share a little bit about your story, your journey to this point, how you got to be teaching today, and best-selling author, musician. I mean, just you're doing some really amazing things. So how did you get here? And I'm sure it wasn't always just, you know, this fluid. So tell us, share.
Well, that one question alone, you might as well just go away from the phone. I'll just talk for the next hour. That's a big question. I mean, in a nutshell, yeah, I'm doing well now. I live the lifestyle of the rich and famous. I have numerous books, been in a bunch of movies, and I am a musician. I have 13 or so albums out. I've lost track. I'm doing wonderful things and having a great time, absolutely loving my life. I'm inspiring as many people as possible and living an inspired life for myself. But it wasn't always that way, as you know. I did want to be a writer even when I was a teenager. But boy, did I struggle. I went through that dark night of the soul. I was homeless in Dallas in the late 1970s. I was homeless in that area, and I was in poverty in Houston for a very long time. I mean, I struggled. I was unhappy. I was despondent. There were times where I was suicidal, and I was doing what I thought were all the right things. I wanted to be a writer, so I was writing, and I, of course, would send my manuscripts out. And, of course, this is decades before the Internet, so it's all done by what we know as snail mail, and it takes forever. My first book was in 1984, and while it was a celebration, it was also a crushing disappointment because I learned publishers don't really market anybody's books. So I kept on plugging along, though. I kept plugging along, and I started to get a little bit of a reputation in Houston, Texas, because I was speaking. I self-published a couple manuscripts. I would sell them in the back of the room. I got better as a speaker. More people would come to my talks. Word would come out that I was worth seeing, and within about 10 years, I was making a little bit of money and a little bit of notoriety. Nothing to write home about, nothing that said I was really successful, but boy, I was plugging along. And of course, the Internet came along. I was one of the ones who said, you can't make any money on the Internet. It's all a joke. It's a scam. There's no gold in cyberspace. And I laugh now because, of course, it helped me bring in an abundance of gold. And I started writing books about the Internet. Cyber Writing was one of my first Internet books, and that came out in 95 or so. And then I just kept plugging, you know. I got audio programs with Nightingale Conant. My first one was The Power of Outrageous Marketing, which was a turning point in my life because I wanted to be a Nightingale Conant author for a decade or more. I prayed, I visualized, I affirmed, knocked on the door, kept sending them product. It took forever. So finally having a program with them was a big step personally and professionally. And, of course, I just kept writing, kept pursuing my passion and my dream, and ultimately I was invited to be in a movie that nobody knew anything about, nobody knew would be anything, but I was flattered to be in a movie. It ended up being The Secret, and The Secret, of course, just shot me into outer space and notoriety on a global level and led to travels and speaking engagements and more books. And, of course, I didn't stop there. I'm still pursuing my passion. I'm still writing books, still coming out with audios, DVDs, and I've recreated myself as a musician, and I call myself the world's first self-help singer-songwriter, having a blast doing that. So here I am at this point living such a dramatically different life from where I was when I was homeless and in poverty. It almost feels like that was a past life with another person, you know, like I was reincarnated. But here I am, and I get to do wonderful things like talk to you.
Awesome, man. It's an amazing story, Joe. And so when you were homeless, I'm curious, like, what was the turning point? You know, was there a moment? Was there a day? Was there something that switched inside of you? What was that turning point that happened for you?
That's a great question. I get asked that a lot because everybody thinks, well, you took a magic pill, you read a magic book, you went to a magic seminar. I would say, if anything, I did have a wake-up about my beliefs and my self-esteem. I was reading all the self-help books from Napoleon Hill to Claude Bristol, and one of the books was The Magic of Believing by Claude Bristol. And all of these books were talking about creating your own reality and believing in yourself and believing in your future. And, boy, I struggled with that because here I am with nothing. I'm homeless, no job, no car, no friends, no nothing. I'm living in the public library, in bus stations, in toilet stalls, in church pews. I mean, I was not living what they were describing. And I would have to look deep within myself, and I remember one moment where I had the realization that a lot of my suffering was self-inflicted because I believed it was necessary for me to be a great author. Mm-hmm. I had read so many biographies, like of Jack London, who I greatly admired, and Ernest Hemingway, who I greatly admired, and they were self-destructive, and both of them ended as suicides. Jack London didn't even make it to the age of 50. He was 40, I believe, when he died. And I thought, well, maybe I have to have this melancholy life, this desperate life, to make my story good or to make my inside have more fortitude. And when I realized that that's a belief, and that belief was operating in my life to such a degree that I was running myself into the ground. When I looked at that and thought, well, wait a minute, maybe there's authors out there who are happy and healthy and productive and prolific, doing wonderful things in the world and having a happy life. When I looked for them and found them, then I started to change my life. So I would say, again, it was still a long road for me, but again, I didn't have the internet, I didn't have calls like this, I didn't have all the freebies we take for granted today, and I was doing it by myself. I was a lone ranger in my own life. So it was a hard road, but that was a turning point. That was a defining moment to realize my beliefs were creating my reality.
I'm curious, how did you, I guess, what kept you going, Joe? You know, you're homeless. It sounds like you were reading, but things were still, the physical environment still was challenging. And, you know, lots of people, I think, give up when they're faced with those kinds of challenges. I mean, living in toilets and church pews, I mean, you know, it's quite kind of intense. So what kept you going? Why did you not give up? What kept you going each day?
A great question. I would say hope and curiosity. Hope that it would all change. I kept writing. I kept sending out my manuscripts. I kept doing what all the books were telling me to do. So I thought, at any moment, this is going to click, and it's all going to change. So I had the hope that at some point, hopefully sooner than better or later, it would all click in and my life would suddenly transform. So the first thing was hope. But the second thing was curiosity, because I kept thinking, I wonder how it's going to play out. I wonder how my life is going to unfold. I'm not a guy who is in the gutter because I'm drinking or I'm on drugs or some sort of derelict. I'm a guy who's pursuing his dream. This should be rewarded by life itself. That's one of my beliefs. And so I had hope and I had curiosity. And the curiosity kept saying, what if you meet somebody you truly love? I was alone at the time. My curiosity said, what if you get published and you become a success? I was striving for that. And my curiosity said, what if this happens sooner than later? What if this happens tomorrow? What if it happens next week? And what if you gave up? You'd miss out on all that. And now I'm sitting here talking to you. I'm 61 years old. I would have missed out on one of the most glorious lives of all time. I was married for 20-some years to a beautiful woman. I would never have had that. I have had more books published than most people have read since they left high school. I never would have had that. I have been on Larry King and Donny Deutsch and CNBC and ABC and all kinds of TV shows. I never would have had that. I've been in 13 movies besides The Secret, or 11 movies besides The Secret. I never would have had that. I'm a musician writing self-help songs that are changing lives. I never would have had that. So curiosity on how this would play out and hope that it would play out soon is what kept me going. And thank goodness I hung in there.
Amazing. You know, and I'm sure it's not easy because I think there's people that maybe they're on the verge of giving up, Jill. They've tried, they've visualized, they've affirmed, you know, they feel like they have read the books and followed the instructions of the books, but perhaps their bank accounts don't reflect what they feel, or they failed numerous times. And I think sometimes it can be hard for folks to cultivate or maintain a sense of self-worth, a sense of belief, when your reality reflects, you know, doesn't reflect that. So how does one begin to cultivate a sense of, let's say, self-value and self-worth?
Yeah, I love where you're going with this, and I certainly feel for anybody who could be struggling at this point. Mm. The way that I help is by pointing out in a kind of a tough love fashion that the reflection you have in your life right now is really a reflection of your inner beliefs. Mm. And I'm pausing for people to absorb it, because when you first hear it, it sounds like, well, that can't be right. You know, and I know that at different points in my life, if somebody had walked up and said, hey, you're homeless because of your inner beliefs, I might have punched them. You know, there's a reality to this, and there's a sense of courage to accept it. But what I learned in my own life is that I was creating that mess based on my beliefs. And you talked about for a second there about self-worth and valuing yourself. I think that's the crux of the matter. Most of us don't believe in ourselves. I know I struggled with that as well. I didn't think I was likable. I didn't think I was lovable. I didn't think I was worth anything. I didn't think I deserved anything. Well, obviously, with those beliefs, I created a reality around me that reflected it. So there's no money. There's no job. There's no relationship. Everything looks terrible, looks meek and poor and just desperate. And it was desperate, but it was a reflection of my beliefs. When I started to change my beliefs about self-love, self-worth, and I don't mean this in any egotistical way, I mean it in a self-appreciation way. When I started to look and say, wait a minute, I have value. I'm a human being. Life itself, God, divinity, the universe, whatever you want to call it, has given me this giant gift, this priceless gift. Yeah, I must be worth something. And then I look within to find what I have of value. I have to look at myself in the mirror and begin to praise myself and begin to say, I love you, and work on myself. As I did all of that, things began to change. Now, as I'm saying this, I'm imagining that it could be a struggle for people to hear, depending on where they're at. This is why I've written whole books, like I wrote Attract Money Now, which has a 7-step formula in it for attracting wealth. And the very first step in it is all about beliefs. It's all about self-love, about the deservingness and self-appreciation. And I give that book away because I'm trying to help people. If anybody wants it, just go to attractmoneynow.com, www.attractmoneynow.com, and they can have it. But to answer your question, it's all a matter of the beliefs. If people look around and they say they don't have enough money, for example, they have beliefs about money. Very often, one of the most powerful beliefs that people have, and it's typically unconscious, which is where all the operating beliefs are, is this phrase. And I don't have to finish it. I'll start it, and people will finish it in their own head. Money is the root of all. And everybody just rushed in and said evil. So imagine you're sitting there and you are affirming, like you mentioned, and you are visualizing and you are scripting and you're believing and you're doing all the right things and you expect to attract money. You're doing all that consciously. Unconsciously, though, you think money's evil. Well, you're not going to want it in your life if you think it's evil. You'll push it away. You'll self-sabotage yourself. You'll try things and unconsciously see that they don't work, so you don't get the money that you regard as evil. It's a belief. I've taken great lengths in books like Attract Money Now to explain that the bigger phrase is the love of money is the root of all evil. Well, that's slightly better than money is the root of all evil. But then you have to look even deeper than that and realize the wealthy people that are really healthy and well-adjusted, the people that I've met in my career, they're not in love with money. They appreciate money. They use money. Money's a scorecard for them. Money is a utilitarian device for them. But they don't love it. That's a big difference. So everything I'm saying here is to help people kind of wake up to the reality that what's around them is due to their beliefs. The beliefs that are operating and creating their reality are unconscious. What they have to do is bring them to light. That's not as hard as it sounds. It's usually faster if you have a coach, and that's why I started a Miracles Coaching Program. But you can do it alone, you can do it with books, and you can do it by listening to conversations like this one, where somebody points out in maybe a earth-shaking, aha kind of a way that things like money being evil aren't true. As soon as you realize money's good or money's neutral or money's spiritual, you can allow it in your life. And when you do, you'll look around and go, wow, there is money here. Wonder where it came from. It came from the same planet that you were saying that didn't have it. It's all beliefs.
So absolute agreement. Beliefs are so powerful and they're controlling our perception, our reality. So as we become aware, because awareness is the key, if we're not aware, these beliefs operating unconsciously and just running our lives, running our behaviors, sabotaging ourselves. How, you know, because it's one thing to go, okay, money is neutral, money is great, but what did you do, Joe, to actually shifted it from just like, okay, I'm saying this thing in my mind, but I don't really believe this new belief. Do you know what I'm saying? And it's like,
right.
Yeah, I'm saying money is good, but I don't really believe it, Joe. I'm saying it. But so how do you take that belief from just this thing you're saying because you should say it to actually integrating it so you really believe it as a new belief?
I love your questions, and that's another million-dollar question. The first thing to realize is that the belief that's already in your head, the one that might say money is evil or there's not enough to go around or I can't bring money into my life, everybody else can but not me, whatever the belief is, got there by your own repetition of it. You kept hearing that belief over and over again. Maybe your parents said it. Most of our parents aren't awakened. Most of our parents weren't enlightened. Most of our parents weren't at peace with money or health or relationship. And we inherited not all of their beliefs, but a great deal of them. They were our early programmers when we were children. And so a lot of the beliefs that we have right now, whether it's about money or health or success, or relationships, you name it, came from them. And why do we have them now? Because we heard them over and over and over again. And soon enough, it became our programming. We accepted it as reality. That's the first step, is to realize that reality is beliefs, and those beliefs came from repetition, usually from authority figures from somebody else. Now, in this moment, you are awakening to being your own authority, and you're going to start saying new beliefs to yourself that you prefer. For example, for the longest time, I, like everybody else, believed that the more money I spend, the less I have. And I would look around, and I can talk to accountants or tax people or neighbors or anybody else. They'd all agree. They'd go, yeah, if you're spending money, you're losing money. You don't have any money if you just wrote a check and sent it out. That's money that's now subtracted. Well, I looked at it and thought, wait a minute. If I live in a belief-driven universe, maybe that's just a belief. So I began to question it. And I thought, what do I really want to believe? Well, I thought, I want to believe the more money I spend, the more money I attract. Mm. When I first said it, I thought, well, God, that doesn't sound right at all. It sounds backwards. It sounds like I'm deceiving myself. But I persisted, right. And I thought to myself, wait a minute. Again, if it's all beliefs and I want to have a different belief, let me try this one on. The more money I spend, the more money I receive. So I repeated it. I'd think about it. I'd visualize it. And sure enough, one day I wake up, and that's my new reality. The more money I spend, the more money I receive is my factual reality today. And the people who know me, who are close to me, family, wife, whatever you want to say, who know me well, know that that's true. I will buy something that's in integrity, you know, it's not whimsical kind of things, but I'm buying something for myself or for somebody else. It's part of my passion and purpose. I get rewarded with money almost the same day, almost instantaneously, because I took a new belief. The more money I spend, the more money I attract. Now, get this. I said that in a seminar one time, and a tax attorney came up. And he said, you know that statement you said about the more money you spend, the more money you receive? And I said, yeah. He said, it's true. And I looked at him fully expecting him to be the one person who's going to arm wrestle me over that sentence. And he said, I have learned that when people have a healthy respect towards money and they live their calling, what they buy for themselves or for somebody else tends to bring more money, not subtract the money they spent. So there's a whole metaphysical topsy-turvy thing going on here, or maybe it's just psychological, but you can change your beliefs. The first thing is to realize the beliefs you have are only there because you rehearsed them. You repeated them. You heard them over and over again. They were like affirmations that the world just kept saying, this is true. Well, today's the day you get to wake up and decide, do you want it or not? You can change. And when you first start changing them, it'll be uncomfortable because it won't seem real. But as you do it a little longer, it will soak in and become the new reality.
Powerful. So for those, Joe, who, you know, there's a lot of talk in some spiritual fields. You know, you go to India and it's like, well, money is an illusion. Money is not spiritual. So there might be folks struggling with this concept of, you know, you talk a lot about money in your work, and,
yes.
And there's a lot of talk about this concept of money isn't spiritual. How can someone make peace with that, you know, in terms of integrating and embracing money? Not just this concept of abundance, but like money, which can
right.
be a loaded
right.
term, as a part of the spiritual path.
I love it. You know, money doesn't have any beliefs about you. You have beliefs about money.
Right, I just wanted to say that again. That was really cool.
You're welcome. Money doesn't have beliefs about you or anybody else, but you and everybody else have beliefs about money. When you stop and consider that, you start to realize that money in and of itself is absolutely meaningless. Meaningless. It means nothing until we project meaning onto it. This starts to reveal that we have all kinds of programming that we add baggage to the money with. For example, I travel all over the world. When I go to Russia, they dump their money in my hand, and I look at it like, this is just paper. This is Monopoly money. This isn't real. Same thing happens if I go to Italy or Poland or Bermuda or any number of places. And you do that enough and you realize, wait a minute, the only reason they value their money is that they've all agreed that it's absolutely valuable to them. The same thing with I'm in Texas, so for us in this country, we look at our money and we expect it to look a certain way, and so we value it because of how it looks. not knowing that we were programmed to look at it that way. So as soon as we start to realize money is absolutely neutral, there is no energy on it in and of itself. It's not spiritual. It's not material. It is just paper and ink and coin. From there, you can decide what it means. I've decided money is spiritual. With money, I can fulfill my dreams. I can fulfill my life calling. My life calling to me is my spiritual mission. In order for me to fulfill my spiritual mission, I need to be on the planet and participate with the planet and how it operates. Part of how it operates is with money. Money is a means of exchange for each of us to achieve our dreams. From that perspective, you begin to realize that, wow, money can actually be a divine tool, a divine gift. All the people who renounce it are probably in the self-sabotage. They have probably self-deluded themselves into thinking it's going to stunt their growth rather than actually help their growth. Mm. When people talk about Mother Teresa, for example, and I greatly admired her and read books by her, and there's an audio program about her, that woman had no problem asking for money and using money. None. Millions and hundreds of millions of dollars went right through her. She knew to use it. One of my favorite quotes from Walt Disney is that he said at one point, "I want to make money from my movies so I can continue making movies." Mm-hmm. I love the purity of that statement because he's really saying, I want to fulfill my life mission of making movies, and in order to do that, I need to have money because I'm on the earth plane where we buy and sell things. We help each other by this means of exchange. Instead of bartering by giving tomatoes and goats to each other, we decided that we're doing it with dollar bills and coins. So money is neutral. Money is peaceful. When we realize we can use it to fulfill our mission, we actually can begin to say, money's actually divine. Money's actually spiritual.
All right, so it's great that you mentioned that reference to Mother Teresa, Joe. And, you know, I think it was hundreds of millions of dollars that went to her. There's a quote I heard someone saying when I went to India a lot, and I used to have a lot of beliefs around money and money not being spiritual. And someone looked at me when I was in India, Joe, and they said, you'll like this one. They said something like, it took a lot of money to keep Gandhi poor. because one of the billionaires in India was the one funding Gandhi so he could do his work and wear his robes and, you know, walk around and do his dharma. So,
and I've heard that. You know, I have a friend who does a lot of volunteer work, and, I mean, she's not afraid to go to third world countries or Peace Corps or this, that, and the other, Habitat for Humanity. And one day she said, you know, you can't really do volunteer work without money.
Yes.
And I thought, wow, what a profound statement from somebody in the trenches. It's like everybody needs the money to pursue whatever the dream is. It is a useful tool for you to fulfill your spiritual mission on earth. It's a good thing.
So what I'm hearing is beliefs are one of the key factors that block money, beliefs that we're not aware of, so we're kind of unconsciously sabotaging. What are some of the other, are there any other biggest blocks that you've seen block people from having money in their lives, abundance, money?
Yeah, well, it's the same thing that blocks them from any sort of success, and it's usually fear. But we have to go a little deeper because there's the fear of failure, which most people are aware of, but there's also the fear of success, which most people don't think about. A lot of people have the fear that if they have too much success or if they have too much money, which they could equate to success, that their life might become a shambles, that they might actually become a source of people coming to them, whether it's family, friends, neighbors, begging for part of their success or part of their money. So to protect themselves, they actually say, well, I'm not going to be successful. Unconsciously, they say this. I'm not going to be successful. I'm not going to allow money to come into my life. this is another reason why people have won the lottery. We've heard so many stories of people having a flush of money show up from an inheritance or a lotto win, and then a year later they've absolutely gone through all that money, and sometimes they're even further in debt afterwards. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing thing to see. But it's not about money or about success. It's about our relationship to money and our relationship to success. So let's look at the fear of failure and the fear of success. I've had to look at both. Throughout my life, I was very aware of the fear of failure because as a writer, a struggling writer, I get rejection notices way too many times. And whenever I received one, I felt like a failure. Oh, it hurt. It would take me weeks to months to recover from it because I took it like an arrow in my heart. It was a physical pain to me. And when I learned to start addressing beliefs, I would ask, what's going on? Why does it feel like such a pain? And it would be reinforcing, or at least I would take it to reinforce the idea that I was a failure. And whenever I started to focus on being a failure and started to have those feelings, well, guess what? I stayed in that mindset. I didn't change from it because I was reinforcing, reliving, reattracting all the vibration, if you will, the reality around me of being a failure. I had to look at it even more deeply and go, okay, if my work is not being accepted right now, does that actually mean I'm a failure? Well, no. What it means is I'm not published. And that doesn't mean I'm a failure. So what I was doing was dissecting the beliefs so that I can get to a place of peace. From the place of peace, I could have more clarity about what I needed to do next, which ultimately led to me writing better material and ultimately getting published and ultimately feeling like, oh, this is success. It's building now. Well, there's also the fear of success. And I remember at one point I started to make money, especially when I first went on the internet, and I was making money from my digital products, my ebooks and so forth back in the late 90s and so forth. And I started to have income, but I noticed that it seemed to have a ceiling to it. Like I would make so much money, and it would seem to be a good amount of money, but I also realized, why wasn't I making more? There are no internet watchdogs that prevent you from making more money. And I thought, there's no real ceiling on the internet or actually anywhere else to how much money you can attract into your life. So why was I bumping up against some sort of invisible floor ceiling? And then I realized, I didn't want to be more successful than my father. When I stopped and looked at that, I thought, oh, wow, I want a certain level of success, but I don't want to go in a greater depth of success. I didn't want to have more money or more success than my dad. And I looked at that. Again, this is dissecting beliefs to find out, was it true? Is that what I really believed? And I did. I had to admit to myself, yeah, I don't want to be more successful than my dad. And then I had to look at, is that actually a useful belief? And is it true? Then I looked at it and thought, well, no, it's not a useful belief. My father will be proud of me if I do really well. He wants me to do well. He's not sitting there feeling sorry for himself. He's old and retired, and he's watching his children grow up. He wants them to succeed. And when I realized that success would be good for me and it would be good for other people around me, I lifted that ceiling. And sure enough, not only did I make more money, and I'm continuing to make more money and getting greater and greater levels of success even now as we speak, my father is still with us, and he is proud of me. He's amazed, he's confused, he's delighted, he's incredibly, outrageously delighted that his son is doing so well. So we have to look at both, the fear of failure and the fear of success.
So, you know, you've been homeless, you've had no money, you've made money, you're making money, experiencing the abundance of you know, just life. And money can, you know, it's often a source of challenge for people. What have you found, you know, and just, it's almost like I wish you could be face-to-face with the audience because it's almost like metaphorically, I want you to look the audience in the eyes, you know, soul to soul, as a man who has lived it, and really share with them what are the keys to that you have found the most important invaluable keys that if you were to pass to, you know, let's say the next generation, your children, their children, grandchildren, the most important things as to the keys to making money that you've learned, what are they?
Well, that's such a great multi-layered question. I have a saying that money likes speed. Money likes speed. And what that means is when you get an idea for a product or service, you need to act and act fast. There's a lot of reasons to do it. Most people don't, because most people talk themselves out of their own good. Most people will have excuses. They'll say, oh, not now, not me. I don't have the education. I don't have the experience. I don't have the money. I don't have blah, 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 blah. It'll go on forever, and they won't take any action. What I've learned is that money likes speed. So when an idea comes to me, it's like a gift from the universe. I don't know where that idea came from, but it chose me. And I will, as quickly as possible, take action to implement it into reality. This explains why I've written 50-some books, and I have, I don't know, 11 music CDs. And, you know, I produce far more than most people. And the valid reason why is that I don't listen to the voice of doubt anymore. I certainly did growing up, and I certainly did in the beginning. And what that did was slow me down. Listening to your own voice of doubt, your own voice of conservatism, your own voice of criticism, is just going to stop the flow of abundance into your life. So when I get an idea, knowing that money likes speed, I take action, and I take action as quickly as I humanly possibly can, very often the same day. In the early days of the internet, it was kind of a joke. I would come up with an idea in the morning, I'd flesh it out, write it out in the afternoon, and by the next day it was online and being sold.
Wow.
And the only reason to move that fast, or the only way you can move that fast, is when you're out of your own way. And that means your mind chatter, the monkey mind, that voice that says, yeah, that was right for Joe Vitale, it was right for Coot, but it's not right for me, or it won't work for me. That voice is the one you've got to learn to recognize and ignore. In fact, a wiser approach is to create an inner cheerleader. You already have an inner critic. That's been there for a long time. Let's have an inner cheerleader. I've also created one of those in my mind, and I think that's another secret to success. The inner cheerleader says, yeah, that might work. Yes, let's do it today. Yeah, you're the one to take action on this. Yes, let's move, because the faster we move, the faster the universe will reward us. So having an inner cheerleader, taking action, knowing money likes speed, all of these are very powerful insights to attracting success or attracting more money. Now, of course, I want to make sure everybody knows that having an entrepreneurial mind is really a secret to success. I didn't know this growing up. I just thought, well, I want to be a writer, so my entire focus was on writing. And what that did was prevent money from coming to me in other ways. I do know that when I started seeing a coach, and that coach would say, hey, you got to open your mind, you're just wanting money to come from one pathway, but the universe is vast and incomprehensibly huge, and money can come from you from insanely unexpected ways if you open your mind to it. And I found that very difficult until I started to read about entrepreneurs. I had read about P.T. Barnum, the great circus promoter, and I actually wrote a book about him called There's a Customer Born Every Minute. And in my research, in my study, in my reading of books by and about him, I realized that he had these eyes that were open for opportunities. One of my favorite stories is he looked at a little boy he had heard about. The little boy was called Charlie Stratton, and the little boy was said to be a midget, that he would never grow. And everybody else looked at the little boy and said, oh, how sad that he will never grow any larger than what he is, like 3 feet tall. But Barnum looked at him and thought, oh, there's a superstar here. And he renamed him General Tom Thumb. And he made him one of the world's first celebrities, and he made him rich and famous to a level of success that Charlie Stratton / Tom Thumb never, ever would have had in his life. So by studying entrepreneurs, I began to realize that when you think like an entrepreneur, you begin to see opportunities that other people don't see. And when you see those opportunities and, again, act on them, because money likes speed, you will create new avenues for you to have money come into your life. These are all insights and laws and secrets and aspects of how to have success.
Awesome. You know, as you were talking and through this conversation, it's been really powerful, and I hope everyone, you're taking notes and shifting your beliefs, recalibrating your beliefs and energy just by listening to this conversation with Joe Vitale. It's been awesome to this point. Joe, you know, how do I ask this question? It's almost like, how does someone know, right, if their beliefs on one part are not delusional, or how, and the same goes with, let's say, their goals. You know, how does someone discern, it maybe is the word, that what they're desiring is truly authentic and not just some egoic trip, so to speak. And the process of discerning, you know, I'll give you a quick example. I remember years ago, 10, 12 years ago, a friend of mine, who's not really a friend of mine anymore, she just believed that, you know, she was destined to marry Leonardo DiCaprio, and it was her belief, and she really believed it, and it just, she went a little, you know, off the deep end, but it really affected her life. So how does someone really discern that what they're believing is in alignment, I would say, with their highest, you know, their highest calling, their soul, their most authentic self? Hope that makes sense.
It makes great sense, and I love that question. You know, when people want to put their will on another person, that is a clear indicator that they have a delusional belief. I often hear from people, it's one of the most reoccurring questions, they'll say, oh, I have an infatuation with my teacher or my next-door neighbor or the person that's in this class with me, and I want to marry them. Can I use the law of attraction and visualize being with that person? And I'll say, no, that is a violation of free will. Leonardo DiCaprio has his own choices to make. He may choose to meet that person at some point in time. We don't know that. But to sit there and to visualize and fantasize about an individual is a clear indicator. That's a yellow flag on the field that says you are violating the rules of life. You have control over your life. You don't have control over other people's lives. And when it comes to relationships, I usually say something like, yeah, I know Leonardo DiCaprio is a pretty cool guy. Yep, I like him too. But there's 7 billion people on the planet. There might be a more appropriate match for you. What you want to do instead is focus on the qualities you like in Leonardo. What are the things you like about him? Make that list. And now you are allowing your unconscious mind or the universe, whatever you want to call it, to realign everything so you can meet your match, which may or may not be Leonardo DiCaprio. So that's the first thing to look at, is the reality of it, and there's a clear signal flag on the field when somebody starts to say they want to do something with a particular person. Now, the other thing to keep in mind is you really have to have razor-sharp awareness of your own desires to have a sense of what is on your path or not. When people are ruthlessly honest with themselves, they know. And I'm saying this in a particular way. I mean, my sentence structure when I say ruthlessly honest is intentional, because people can still deceive themselves if I just said, hey, just be honest with yourself. And they sit there and say, well, I'm 75 years old and I want to be the president of the United States. Well, does that seem like an honest mission for you in particular? If they already have 50 years of political experience, maybe. But most likely, probably not. So the bigger answer for me is that you have to have razor-sharp awareness of yourself and really reflect on the urges within you to find out, are they coming from your monkey mind or are they coming from your loving heart? And when you really sit with it, you can usually tell. If you really are having a problem with it, I'd say talk to a coach. Talk to somebody who's an detached, loving observer, not a critical family member who you know is just going to blow the socks off of you and say, don't go for any of your dreams. You need to talk to somebody who believes in dreams, believes in magic and miracles, believes in success, believes in your deservingness, but is detached and aware enough to be able to say, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio, as nice as he is, probably is not the match. What do you like about him? And maybe we can find a match that way. So all of this is what would go into the hopper and have people meditate on it.
Good stuff. Really good stuff. The discernment and cultivating the ruthless honesty, everyone.
Yes.
As you look at what you truly want, as you look at your intentions, really be ruthlessly, you know, honest with yourself, because that gives you access to truly, truly choosing. You know, Joe,
let me say one more thing that occurs to me. Jose Silva was a wonderful self-help instructor who created the Silva Mind Method, and I spoke on the same event with him many decades ago. And I remember him saying that a goal should help you and at least two other people to be a worthy goal. And I kind of like that benchmark. So if somebody says, I really want to go after a particular dream, does that dream help you as well as two or three other people? So you kind of have a check system there to make sure it's not pure self-indulgence.
Excellent. So what's the balance between, you know, having an intention, you know, knowing what you want, right, and having this intention and being very clear about it and holding the intention and surrender, you know, surrender into life, that balance between making something happen with your intent and allowing, because, you know, I find many times sometimes life unfolds in ways that my mind couldn't even imagine, and you know, sometimes it's way beyond what I ever thought. So talk about that, because I think a lot of people have questions around that process of how much am I in control versus how much do I allow and surrender.
What a wonderful question, and I'm laughing because I have the same experience as you. I used to be the type A, set the intention and go for it kind of a personality until I started to let go of that because of my own little spiritual experiences I was having. And I realized that, wait a minute, inspiration is so much more important than intention. If I allow myself to be inspired by the universe or divinity or God, I will end up attracting very easily things that will boggle my mind. And then I started to say that intentions in many ways are for wimps. Intentions in many ways are limitations. So there is a fine line, because I still like intentions. Before I got on this call, I made an intention. I wanted to be sure that I answered your questions with clarity. I wanted to be loving, and I wanted to deliver wisdom. I want to be of great service to everybody. So I stated that as an intention. But after I stated it, I had to let go. I have to surrender. I don't have that intention written down. I'm not looking at it. I'm not thinking about it. I put it out there for my body and mind and the universe to listen to, and then I let go to trust it to unfold in its own way. Now, when I wrote the book, The Attractor Factor, and I talked about intentions in there, I said the wonderful little escape clause, if you will, is to add the phrase, this or something better, to your intention. So if you say, I really want to do fantastic on this call, but this or something better. Well, something better might be that I come up with the most inspired answers to your questions that neither one of us saw coming. I couldn't plan it. I couldn't prepare for it. I couldn't fully intend it. But my intention kind of called forth the inspiration, and then from there I surrender to what's happening. So, again, it's this balancing act. I still like intentions. Again, they're fine. But I know in the back of my mind they can be limitations. They can be for wimps. I want the bigger reality. I want the magic and miracles of life. I don't want to be limited by my little mind who states these little intentions thinking that they're actually big when the universe can give me something bigger. So I like adding the phrase, this or something better, and then letting go. And that letting go is implying trust and faith in life, in yourself, in the moment. I keep learning that the more I stay in the moment, right here in this moment, without worrying about the future or being concerned about the past, the more I stay in this moment, the more I experience all the miracles I could ever have imagined and more.
Love it. Intention calls forth the inspiration, and then we get to surrender to what happens. So, you know, as everyone, as you're listening in to this conversation with Joe Vitale, really sit with what is the intention, but also as you set the intention, as you write that as a goal in your journal, for instance, really invoke the surrendering to something better, something higher, then you know that whatever shows up ultimately from that place is perfect, is highest for your own soul's evolution. Good stuff, Joe. Good stuff. You know,
thank you.
I think there's folks that, you know, we've all lived lives, Joe. We've all done things that maybe we weren't proud about. People, I think lots of folks listening too, maybe carrying certain resentments and shame towards certain things that they've experienced in their own lives. And I always feel that this shame, this heaviness kind of clouds our light from shining. And I found that many times we often unconsciously sabotage ourselves from moving forward out of not feeling deserving based on, you know, something we've done in the past. So how does one, in your experience, based on your own life, how does one forgive themselves? How does one really forgive themselves, let go of the past so that they don't carry that past into their future and keep recreating something from the past? How does one forgive themselves? What's that?
Well, mean? I'm glad that you phrased it the way that you did, because that's an important insight to realize in order to forgive yourself. And what I'm referring to is you will recreate experiences until you get the lessons. In my book, The Attractor Factor, I had said, once you get the lesson from your experience, the experience goes away. So it's important to realize that whatever the juice is, whatever the emotion is that you're hanging on to, is burning up your own energy system. If you have a resentment against somebody else, it's burning your energy system up, not theirs. If you're unhappy about something that somebody else did in your life and you feel like you were betrayed or hurt in some way or it was unfair, you are hurting yourself because your energy is going down. Your vibration is going down. Your self-worth is going down. Your ability to attract is going down. When you start to realize that the only person being affected by this mindset is you, you start to realize that the wise thing to do is let it go. Now, there's a lot of different techniques on how to let go. There's everything from just having the awareness that this is no longer serving you, and that awareness alone can help pop it, and it'll be gone from your experience, to also realizing that this is a story you've been telling yourself, and when you change your story, you'll have a different reality, to also using things like the tapping method, which is the emotional freedom technique, which I've always loved. I've loved it ever since Roger Callahan invented it and called it thought-filled therapy. It was originally TFT. And you can look, if people don't know about that, they can look online and search that or watch a movie called The Solution, or The Tapping Solution, I think is it. So all of these are different ways to forgive. And I think it's really important to grasp that you have to do this. I think it was Wayne Dyer who at one point said, if there is any block in your life, in any way, shape, or form, a block of forgiveness, a block of success, a block of money, a block of health, a block of relationship, it can all be traced to not forgiving. Not forgiving yourself or not forgiving somebody else, and more often than not, it's not forgiving yourself. You really have to look in the mirror and go, I forgive you, I love you. You really have to realize you did the best you could. Whatever the situation, you had your own moment in that moment in time that had its own beliefs, its own little scenario, and how it worked out was how it worked out. You can rewrite the story of it so you have a different view of it, but you can also just look at it and go, I forgive myself because I did the best I could.
Beautiful. beautifully. I think we've all done the best we can, and what's important is that we forgive ourselves, we let the past be in the past and learn from those experiences and use them for our evolution moving forward. So, Joe, we're talking about success. You know, we've been talking about a lot on this call, and I think everyone, I'm sure, I know everyone listening in has been receiving tremendous value, and I hope you're all taking lots of notes and get to re-listen to this conversation with Joe Vitale on the Secret to Success Summit. It's been powerful to this point. Joe, you live quite a life, as you've been sharing on this call, and I'm curious, based on where you are today and everything you've learned, what is success to you? What does success mean to you today, based on who you are now?
Well, I'm going to give you a couple versions, and I wouldn't have said this at another time, but I'm inspired in this moment to say success means being happy in this moment.
Hmm.
I would say for the longest time I wasn't, and so I didn't feel successful. Being happy in this moment is success. Almost none of us do it, and almost none of us are grateful for what we already have. But as soon as we sink into this moment and we're grateful for whatever it is, even while we still may want to tweak some things or have some things or move some things around in our life experience, when we move into the gratitude of now, we will experience the success of now. I think it was in my book, The Attractor Factor, I said, success is being able to do what you want to do when you want to do it. And I still like that definition, being able to do what you want to do when you want to do it. But I want to add today the more elevated spiritual view that being happy now is true success.
Powerful. Being happy now is true success. Something to really ponder, everyone. This moment is a real gift. And this is it, you know. So, Joe, when you look at the present, and you look at the now, you look at the past, you look at where life is going. You know, you were involved with the beginning stages of marketing online and building a successful business online as well as your books. I'm curious, when you look at where things are at now, where do you see the greatest opportunities for those listening in as entrepreneurs, and what excites you the most as you look at where things are at today?
What excites me the most is the openness of the possibilities, meaning I don't have a clue what's going to be coming down the road next. I didn't predict the internet. I didn't predict the iPad or e-books or touch screens or anything that is so wonderful to have in our lives today. I can't even imagine what's coming next, but I can't wait to see it and feel it and find it or buy it. So I think the world is just this wide open, miraculous canvas. And that what's really exciting for entrepreneurs is you get to paint this any way you want it. There have been so many people who have come up with products or ideas or services that have been funny or zany or practical or realistic or totally off the wall, and they worked. We have no idea what's going to actually take off, what would be a success, what will earn money. And that's the real excitement of it all. We get to try anything. Whatever comes to mind, an entrepreneur can come up with an idea for a product or service and have it online pretty quick, money like speed, remember, and you can find out if that's the path to go or something else down the road. It is so amazing. I would say that we truly live right now in the time of magic and miracles. The time of great wonder and awe is right now. And the secret to really bringing it in a bankable way, in a money way, in an abundance way, in a success way, is to follow your passions. Whatever excites you, whatever is turning you on, whatever you're really profoundly curious about, pursue that. And allow yourself to be creative, because we don't know what the limits are. I'm not sure we have any limits in life at all. I'm not convinced we have any. there might be a couple, but let's go bump our heads against them. Let's go find out what the limits really are by doing something wild and wonderful. So I don't know what's next, but I'm going to fasten my seatbelt, and I'll be waiting for the next passionate entrepreneur to show it to me.
Exciting. I hope you're all inspired listening to this amazing, enlightening, powerful conversation with the one and only Joe Vitale. Joe, I have a couple more quick questions for you as we, you know, bring this amazing interview to a wrap.
Okay.
Is, you know, based on your life experiences, some of what you said might overlap, but based on everything you've been through, everything you've learned, the hardships, the successes, if there were three key life lessons that you would say, you know, and I'm sure there's more than three, but if they were the most important life lessons that you've learned that you would pass on to the next generation that you feel would evolve the next generation the most, what would the three keys to life that you've learned be?
Wow. Okay. Off the top of my head, I would say, one, follow your passion. That is the golden yellow brick road to success. Follow your passion. It's different for each person. Following my passion is right for me, but, you know, Mark Twain said if you did what he did for his entire life and drank wine and ate and smoked cigars, you might be annihilated way beyond your time. It was right for him, but maybe not right for you. So follow your passion. It's the key to your personal success. It's the clue to what's right for you. Follow your passion. The second is have a mindset that it all works out. Worry less, work more would be the second one. Worry less, work more. And that's referring to, I know that when I was struggling, I worried so much, so many sleepless nights, so many nights of tears, just so unhappy and worried about what was going to take place, so much in fear. None of it inspired me or motivated me. None of it helped. None of it paid the bills. None of it made a difference. It all works out. Be aware of what's going on around you. Handle the earth-level realities of paying your bills. But don't worry about it. So I would say the second thing is worry less and work more. And the third thing is think like an entrepreneur. And that means turning on your mind for opportunities. For example, when I was on Donnie Deutsch's show, he had this wonderful show on CNBC years ago called The Big Idea, and I absolutely loved it. And he was coaching entrepreneurs, and one of the things he said is, whenever you hear an opportunity, I mean, whenever you hear a complaint, that's an opportunity for a product or service. Whenever you hear a complaint, whether it's a complaint from you or you're standing in line somewhere and somebody says, why doesn't somebody invent so-and-so? Why don't they do this to cut the line shorter? Why isn't there a product that does such and such? Instead of hearing it as a complaint, whether it's from you or somebody else, hear it as a possible product or service. That's how an entrepreneur thinks. An entrepreneur sees money-making possibilities everywhere. And by reading books about entrepreneurs or reading this, that, or other online, you can stretch your mind to start to think like that. So those are the three things that come to mind.
Powerful three keys from Joe Vitale that you can embrace and use and apply in your life to really just fulfill your highest destiny. It's really powerful. Joe, it's been amazing to just dialogue with you, and your generosity and your wisdom has been really just powerful today. I would love for you to assign everyone listening in a homework assignment, something that they could do immediately to apply and embody and practice in their lives what you've been saying. Is there a homework assignment that is a powerful, simple practice they can do, let's say, within the next hour that will make a difference within themselves?
Yes, there is. I would advise them to do what I call nevelize your goal. Nevelize is a coined word. It's based on the famous mystical teacher Neville Goddard. And I've always loved Neville Goddard. I wrote about him in The Attractor Factor and in my book Attract Money Now and probably a bunch of other places. And what Neville taught people is not just to visualize your goal, whether the goal is for more money or more success, whatever it happens to be. You don't just visualize the goal, because that's kind of putting it off in the distance, and it's separate mm-hmm. from you. And visualization's powerful. I know enough from hypnosis to know that when you're visualizing, you're engaging more of your mind. That's great. But Nevilleizing your goal means to act as if it's already happened. So if you want more money, what would it feel like right now to have that money? If you want to be a success, what would it feel like right now to be a success? What you do is pretend in a kind of a holographic way, kind of a self-induced trance, but you joyfully, with great passion and acceleration, you realize that the goal you want, what you've been imagining to attract, it's already over. You've already done it. If you've wanted a new car, you've got the keys in your hand and the car's in the driveway. Instead of putting it off in the distance, it's happening right now. The more you nevilleize your goal, the faster you will attract it into your life. Your whole body and mind will embody this feeling, and the more you do it, you can do it today, you can do it tomorrow, whenever it feels right, whenever you intuitively are reminded of it, nevilleize the desire, and then let it go. Do whatever comes to mind next, whatever action steps, whatever intuition comes up, whatever the opportunities are, keep moving forward with passion and purpose in your life. But nevilleize your goal as your homework, because that one single thing can transform your success almost overnight. Nevilleize your goal. That's the tip.
Powerful, everyone. You heard the homework assignment from Joe Vitale. Nevilleize your goal, acting as if, feel it as already done. So I'd like you to pick one thing in your life, one specific goal, and for the next 24 hours, and you can do it for 24 hours after that and after that as well, but for 24 hours, commit to acting, feeling, breathing, moving in the state of being that is already done, and see what that opens up, and let me know how that goes. I'd love to hear that your feedback and experiences from the 24 hours of nevilleizing your goal. Powerful, powerful stuff from Joe Vitale. Joe, it's been amazing to this point. I really want people to stay in touch with you and connect with your work. What's the best way, Joe, that people can find out about your work and stay connected to what you're up to?
Well, thank you, and thank you for the opportunity to be here. These are amazing questions, a great thing that you're doing here, so I applaud you for that. My main website is simply my name, joevitale.com, www.joevitale.com, joevitale.com. And again, I'm giving away that book, Attract Money Now. That's another great way to stay in contact. Just go to www.attractmoneynow.com. And the ebook is there for people to obtain and read. And again, thank you, and Godspeed to all your listeners.
Awesome, Joe. It's been an amazing conversation. You're a great inspiration to me and many. It's been great having this conversation with you. Thank you for your heart, your generosity, your passion, and your commitment to serving people live abundant and free lives. Let's send some love to Joe Vitale. We'll post the links to Joe's website. Check out his offer of his book, and download that. I'm sure it will be a powerful addition and inspiration to your journey of success. Everyone, it's been amazing. I told you it was going to be an amazing time with the one and only Joe Vitale. He's an amazing man. And you're all amazing, and it's been a great journey to this point. Our journey of the Secret to Success Summit will continue each day, bringing you new mind-blowing, soul-expanding insights to just assist you and inspire you in fulfilling your true soul's potential. And, you know, as Joe's saying, acting as if it's already done, you're already a success right now. It's done. You're already a success. Feel that, breathe that, live that, and see what happens in the next 24 hours. I'm excited to check in with you again on our next interview. The Secret to Success Summit Success School continues. Spread the word. Sending you love. Love now.